These at-home test kits are actually test collection kits, so you just collect a sample with the nasal swab and then send that off to the lab to be tested.
And the reliability of this? We have 10 seconds.
Sure. So it's, you know, at this point it's pretty early, but we think that they are fairly reliable, but again, there's always a risk that if you're not swabbing correctly, maybe you would have a false negative.
Well, Tanya Lewis, I want to thank you for being with us, Associate Editor for Health and Medicine at Scientific American. We'll link to your piece. Here's what we know about the most touted drugs tested for COVID-19. And that does it for our show. Democracy Now! Is working with as few people on site as possible. The majority of our amazing team is working from home. I'm Amy Goodman. This is The Quarantine Report. Thanks so much for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland. The time is 7:59. Coming up next is more talk radio.
Good morning. You are listening to your community radio station, KBOO FM. This is More Talk Radio, and I am Cecil Prescott here with my co-host, Celeste Carey.
Yes, Martin conversation.
Indeed. Yeah, I was just about to mention that today is Monday. It is Monday, is it not? The 27th of April.
Hey, that part I got down pat. I know it's the right date because I checked my calendar this morning. Don't ask me why, just a habit. Nothing arcane. But yes, you are listening to your community connection, KBOO Portland. And we are at 90.7 in the Portland metropolitan area. We are at 91.9 in all points east. And, in the south, like Philomath, it is 104.3. There. Got it done.
Okay. Excellent.
Yeah.
And how are you today, Celeste? Today is, it's still Monday, and it's where I'm at. It's still kind of rainy or cloudy or misty or...
Yeah, all of that.
April showers and all of that.
Yeah, this is the rainy season, as they say. And if that wasn't enough, you know, with it being the rainy season, it's also, I don't know, verdant and green and luring people out and making people think that they really shouldn't be staying inside anymore. And regardless of how you feel about everything, consider the fact that we don't know enough about the COVID virus to really give good care. We can only do what they call palliative care in the healthcare and medical field, which means we can try to make you feel better, but we can't cure it. So you want to, like, take good care of yourself and not go anywhere. You don't want to be out and about. And I'm sure for a lot of people, that's really stressful.
I was speaking to a friend of mine yesterday who, he and his family, took a bike ride. And he was surprised about how many people were out and not practicing social distancing yesterday. I think many of us feel like, oh, I feel okay, and things are going to be all right, and the weather is nice, and it's okay to go outside and have fun and interact with friends. Not so.
No, we don't know enough about this disease, and, you know, even though I used to work as a nurse, I'm trying to recall that even though we can use some of the best practices for reducing infection, hand washing, infectious precautions, all of that, exposure precautions, all of that, we still can't cure this disease. There's no vaccination for this disease. All we can do is help people try to wait it out, and you know, not having a secure sense that, okay, if I get sick, I can be helped to kick this and recover. I'm willing to stay in. I'm willing to keep my face covered. I'm willing to do that physical distancing just because. But, you know, one of the good things that comes with having this time to do physical distancing and stay in is that you get to read a lot.
You do. And,
you mean your mind may be mush right about now, and you may not be comprehending it as well as you used to, but I guarantee you can read a lot more. So, you know, one of the things that I've read that I found really interesting, and Cecil and I discussed it because we've covered it on, you know, under different perspectives, is the fact that we have an election coming up. It's a hotly contested election for lots of reasons, but one of the subtexts for why it's hotly contested is the fact that it's been business as usual, although the parties and the candidates have made a lot of noise about how they want to be more responsive to the broadening of the American population and the American constituency. And so, you know, you've got cries for having women run. You've got cries for a different political perspective. You've got cries for multi-ethnic platforms and candidates, even though right now we still have two senior citizen white males running in the primary spots. But the other
And you're speaking about the presidential election.
Yes, I am. I'm talking exactly about the presidential election. And one of the other challenges is that because we're supposedly or trying to practice physical distancing and we're not getting out, there's some concerns about our voting process. Are we going to vote by mail? Are we going to have a physical vote where we have to actually get out and get to a poll? People are worried about whether there'll be some interference with the legal process of voting. And so there's, you know, the whole idea of how we're going to lead this nation both out of this particular situation and into the light is really disturbing and distressing for a lot of people. Well, let's just dig a little deeper into that whole concept of the problems with voting and think, how are we going to even appeal to people? Because according to New York Magazine, Americans won't vote their class anymore. And why that is significant is if you've got the oligarchs, the rich, the elite, you know, whatever you want to call them, what amounts to an American ruling class, running things, and you have people who are no longer easily accessing things they need, whether it be education or loans or jobs or property and et cetera. If you can't get those people who don't have access to recognize they don't have access and vote so that they can get access, then the ruling party stays the ruling party because people are not voting according to their needs or according to their best interests. They're voting according to something else.
Well, I want to possibly expand this a little bit more because those who are in Oregon have a primary coming up in the middle of May. I think it's May 19th, and the voters' pamphlets have been received in homes, and this week you will probably receive your ballot. And you've made reference to the how people will vote. And while those in Oregon and some other states in Oregon have the possibility, and well, the only way you can vote in Oregon is by mail, is the mail-in ballot. It has been for 20 years, so that sort of poo-poo the accusation by the president that it is fraud with fraud in terms of voting, whether or not people will vote correctly or not. But also in terms of this question about whether you'll vote your interests or your class, I think that manifests itself on local elections as well as state election as well as national election. And as the recent article in the New Yorker talk about, not the New Yorker, or New York Magazine, is it correct?
Yes, New York Magazine.
Yeah, as that article talks about how people are not, will not vote their class, it's the reminders of an article, a book actually that came out about 15 years ago about why Kansas, I just had it.
What's Wrong with Kansas?
What's Wrong with Kansas, yeah. And it talks about how what motivates us in terms of voting. And the question should we vote by class? I mean, that's the I think that's what I got out of the New York Magazine article, was that, of course, we should vote by class, but we don't. And there are other things that are more persuasive for us. And so if that's the case, how do we make the argument that we should vote by our class interests rather than others? Or does that have more priority than other things, whether it might be religion, racial identity, geography, class should have priority over others' interests in voting? Those are some of the things that I think people wrestle with, maybe consciously and probably not very consciously or as they enter into the voters' booth or begin to mark down their ballot.
Well, so one of the things we want to throw out to our listeners is how valid do you think, you know, both this article's premise and then our thought that maybe there should be other things that trump voting by class, you know, that are more important than voting by class. We'd like to throw that out to our listeners and just have a discussion. We realize that, and my favorite expression right now, there's too many variables and not enough constants for me to make an equation of my to-do list. You know, I can't figure out where to go from here. And so maybe this whole exercise in politics is moot because we have no idea what's going to happen, you know, nationally in terms of a month from now. And trying to speculate over what's going to happen in November may seem pointless. But in the face of uncertainty, what we should do is do the things that we know we can do, which is put one foot in front of the other. So, you know, I would say it's not pointless for us to think about how we would vote were things to have a return to some sense of order, because you got to have a plan. Oh, my God, yeah. I sound just like my daddy. Did I just turn into my parents? That was my dad's tagline. Oh, my goodness, everything. Well, what's your plan? So anyway, what's your plan? What do you think? How should we be voting? We are not the controllers economically, but we have, well, we don't have the money, we have the people, you know. Phone number is 503 231-8187. Join in the conversation here on More Talk Radio with Cecil and Celeste.
And again, this is Monday, April 27th. Why Americans Don't Vote Their Class Anymore, an article by Eric Levitz in the New York Magazine, April 26th. In it, he offers the perspective or the analysis of we don't and why don't we? Those are questions. And of course, you know, the presidential campaign of Senator from Vermont emphasized the importance of being aware of class and economics, and that campaign fell short in the perspective that he will probably not be the nominee of the Democratic Party, but people may argue that the effectiveness of that movement is not necessarily measured by one political campaign, but how, whether or not it has energized a political base and possibly altered the way Americans are viewing how they make elections decisions. The pandemic we are in and the crisis in the economy that has occurred since the last couple of months, and the fact that millions of Americans are losing their jobs and millions of Americans find that they don't have adequate health insurance or able to pay for health care may have altered our perspective. And how will the major party nominees address these issues, which are uppermost among Americans, as they wait online or wait on the phone to process their employment claims? I think perhaps that people might be more aware of class. Give us your perspective. Our numbers are 503-231-8187.
Well, Cecil, we do have someone calling in right now. Joan is on the line.
Thank you.
Good morning.
Good morning, Joan. And it's a little hard to hear what's going on. It's a kind of weird connection. Can you hear me?
Yes.
Yes, we can.
Okay, well, this is great. I'm so glad you're actually in the air room. It's like, that is something normal that I like. I'm actually participating in something. So you asked about voting, how we're going to vote?
Well, more so, you know, what motivates us to vote? Is it our social economic position? Is it our, you know, ethnic identity or gender or what?
And I see. And, well, okay. Okay, thank you. That's what you were talking about. Well, you know, I think we have to look at the bigger picture. And I know where I stand. I'm a working class older person. I'm still working. I know what my ethnicity is. But the point is, I've got to vote for the person that I think will do the best job for all of us. And I'm looking at myself and where I'm standing, but I also have to look at the greater good for everybody. And, you know, there are people who are suffering a lot worse than I am, and I'm only working for part of my job now, and I'm on unemployment, and I have to consider that. And I'm not against rich people if they're doing the right thing for people, and I don't like the idea of that we have an oligarchy, absolutely not. So how do I vote? I try to vote for the person that I think has the best heart and the best mind for the situation. And I would have been fine with Elizabeth Warren, and I would have been fine with Bernie Sanders, and I'm okay with Joe Biden because, well, for a variety of reasons, but I can't just think about myself in this anymore. I've got to get past my own opinions, if they're just opinions coming from me, because not everybody is me. You know what I'm saying? I have to think about you, too. Because what's bad for you is bad for me. And what's bad for the homeless people out on the street is bad for me. And just looking at it in a kind of enlightened self-interest way, I can't just think about me. And if I'm thinking about me and thinking, oh, well, you know, there's two old white guys who are running and I'm not going to vote for either one of them, I'm shooting myself in the foot, and I'm also shooting you in the foot. And I'm shooting a lot of other people in the back. So I have to consider where I stand and who I am. But, you know, as the saying is, if I'm only for me, then what am I? No?
Yes.
If I'm not for me, then I've got a problem, but I can't only be for me. And if someone is younger and thinking, well, I'm younger and I, you know, don't care about those old people, they're shooting their grandparents in the back, right? And people who don't have kids have to consider the kids and the education. So it's not just about me, but it is about me.
But the challenge is we are not looking at the fact sometimes that as a group, when we're looking at my parents, my grandparents, my neighbor, my homeless friends, you know, my poor friends and relatives, we forget sometimes that that's the result of an overarching cohort, and that's the fact that we're working class. And sometimes we vote in ways that are not the most helpful for working class. I mean, that are just antithetical. They don't do anything for working class.
Right.
That's been one of the big challenges. You know, we ask people, well, why don't people vote according to their class anymore, realizing that maybe voting for one candidate, you know, seems like a good idea, but this person is against Medicare, or this person is against fully funding public education, you know, things like that.
It's not about personality, and it's not about finding a great leader who can lead us, and it would be lovely to have a nice, charismatic person, but there's a danger in that, you know. I mean, actually, the role of president, he's called a president and not a king, because it's a kind of boring job, really. The president is supposed to administer rules and know how laws are made, and that's what the job is about. And it needs someone who's intelligent enough to understand these things and to apply the laws correctly and to have good advisors and listen to them. So I think this thing, there's a certain amount of cultism going on where people want to get behind, you know, I don't understand the Trump phenomenon at all, because it seems like people are voting against their own interests because of the great leader, you know what I mean? But that's got nothing to do with class. There you're veering into something really dangerous, which is, you know, expecting someone else to save you or something, or these people who talk about the government, you know, we don't want the government telling us what to do. But we are the government, and we have to take that on. We are the government, you know.
So how
government is us.
Would you say something about how this first, whether or not in terms of how your friends and neighbors, do they feel similar to you in terms of their attitude and their voting decision about how they make decisions, and how does it impact you in local elections? Not, as we say, it's not only a national election, but there are local elections.
Elections are really important. Unfortunately, I don't have a computer, so I'm trying to follow it the best I can. In the local elections, it's really important, and again, I have to consider the whole city, which is not that easy to do. Like, who's a good person in there who's doing a good, solid job? And I'm very, very wary of people's egos. If I see that flaming ego raging forth, I get very nervous about that. I don't want somebody that's in there to aggrandize themselves, and somebody who can get in there and do a good job. And you know, of course, what do I mean by a good job? And well, I know where I stand in terms of things like how the police should be and how things should work with the renters, and I know how I feel about raging development and so on. And so I'd have to take those things into consideration. And it gets really complicated with the local election.
That's a good point for us to ask other callers, and to thank you so much for your call, Joan.
You're welcome. I'm so glad you're on the air. I really like your program. Thank you. It's very thoughtful and caring.
Thank you so much.
And you are listening to More Talk Radio. This is our program here on KBOO Portland, 90.7 in the city, 91.9 in the Columbia River Gorge, Hood River, White Salmon, Washington, and Philomath and part south in the Willamette River Valley. It is 104.3. More Talk Radio. Phone number is 503-231-8187. And Cecil and I welcome your phone calls. We're talking today about a conversation that is based on the article in New York Magazine, which says, or asked the question rather, why don't Americans vote their class anymore? And just kind of get an idea of how we work ourselves through the election process out of either the constrictions we're in now or deeper into the hole. I don't know. I'll start with that. What are your thoughts on what our caller had to say, Cecil?
Well, I think a couple of things that she said that I found important, in that one was a recognition of looking beyond herself and her observation that perhaps many people do not do that, and so we have a very narrow interest of what we think, and so the narrower that interest is, the more difficult it is to have a overarching appeal. And also, I think she made the claim, I think, that we have to research and look beyond what we might think is our own narrow interest. How we do that is another question. Are we able to do that to widen our vision? And how do we get our information about all of this? I thought as she was speaking.
How we get our information, because one of the things I did hear, which is most definitely the result of a class status, is that she didn't have access to a computer and therefore regular access to the internet and broader sources of information. And that is most definitely a class-based challenge. You don't have the money or time to purchase or, you know, access the resources. And so that means you have less resources to help balance and shape your perspective. I mean, it sounds reductive, but it's not. I mean, it's, you know, it's a pretty simple equation. So that means you get less really good information, and we already know that what we see on television is shaped to shape us. So you can't really trust what you see with your own eyes on television. So that, you know, that's part of the challenge, you know, looking at maybe those very influences, really simply put, are why we don't vote our class, or maybe there's other seductions involved in there, you know?
Yeah. Also, what you just said made me think that because of our life circumstance, we might have different sources of information, and the challenge, especially if we want people to vote their class interest, is how do you organize people, especially those who do not have access to certain means of communication, certain sources of information. It seems to me, at least, it's very 101 organizing, is that you go out to where the people are and meet them where they are. And if that's in ways in which people, if people don't have access to computers or the internet, how do you meet them? How do you meet them where they are, and how do you organize them? I think that's especially important for those who want to emphasize the importance of organizing by class. We can't sit in our quarantine safe homes and hit the computer keys and believe that's organizing.
Well, folks out there, We know many of you are sitting here wondering, what are you going to do this interesting and mind-expanding today? And one thing you can do is call in and have a conversation with us here on More Talk Radio on your community connection, KBOO Portland. The phone number is 503-231-8187. Join Cecil and myself, Celeste, in our conversation today about why Americans do or don't vote according to their class. Give us a call. One of the things that I find really interesting, and I'm wondering how much people have seen this echo, is one of the ways that kept poor blacks and poor whites in the South separated is strictly by race instead of class. And organizers took advantage of the fact that you could have these really stark polarizations. But other organizers went down to the South and pointed out how there really wasn't that big a difference between the poor whites and the poor blacks, and they were able to build some transracial alliances that frightened many of the elites, and especially because some of these organizers were socialists or communists, or sometimes they were just playing grassroots populists. And they appealed to these people, and they showed the people, look, all of you are being controlled by the people in power. They don't really care. And they demonstrated by, you know, these kinds of policies and these actions. So let's get together. Now, what are the movements like that now that we can point to that maybe pull away the veneer of the organizing strategy from the right or from the elitists, which said, well, you're not like them, you're like us, so you should vote according to us, because then that makes you an even better person. You know, the psychology of being like those who have the most, wanting to imitate those who have what appears to be the best life.
Right. And there are certainly a number of organizers and organizations which are focused on that theme. Those who have been interested in the political electioneering, we've seen the rise and popularity of democratic socialists and the organizing that they are doing, the DSA is doing. We have throughout the nation, and here in Oregon as well, the Poor People Campaign, which is an effort to organize people along class interests and raise the voice of poor and working people. And interestingly enough, you know, in crises like this, I think there's more opportunity, as I hinted earlier in the program, for that organizing to take place. Part of the challenge, though, is that because people are unable to organize people, gather people together, how do you organize people, especially poor and working people, without access to electronic communications, or maybe even telephones, if you can't gather together in a hall or somewhere, how does that organizing take place? Certainly, maybe unique to the situation we are in these days, but organizing working people on the challenges have always been challenging. In all ages. So it's interesting. I'm interested to see how organizing is taking place during this pandemic and what takes place following, whenever that happens. How are people organizing among class? And different ways. What are things that you think that we ought to do that we are doing? What are ways that you find that are successful? Give us your thoughts. Our numbers here are 503-231-8187. You are listening to More Talk Radio on your community radio station, KBOO. And this may be a means by which historically people have organized.
Oh, you mean radio?
Radio, yeah.
Yes, of course.
Remember, you know, that old... Mm-hmm. Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, you know, all of this long distance conversation has historically been facilitated by radio. You go back and you look at the way anyone from either president to stars or faith-based leaders or what have you have taken advantage of radio, you know, and in this age of shelter in place when you can't get out and stump, as they say, for your audiences, radio becomes extra important. And that's one reason why I appreciate our first caller saying, I'm glad you're still on the air. And it's one of the reasons why we at KBOO have been working hard to figure out ways to overcome the shelter-in-place order and find ways to keep our programming going, because it's one way of keeping people connected.
Well, we have some callers in.
Oh, well, good. Thank you so much.
Brian is coming up right now.
All right. Thank you. Good morning, Brian. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing well. I'm doing well. I appreciated the earlier caller, some things she was saying from an interesting perspective. I enjoyed that. And you're asking about why people don't vote their class. And
yes,
it seems to me the thing that the reason that I've thought of for a long time is that the strength of the American dream, and I think that American dream is kind of a twisted thing. It kind of means that someday, just around the corner, I'm gonna make it big, and then when I make it big, I want to have these same benefits that the current rich people have. So that seems to me what a lot of it is like I wanna have free ability to just do whatever I want, and so they vote for the benefit of the rich people, even though really they're not ever going to be one, you know. And the rich people will prod them on, but then kind of laugh behind their back, saying, "Yeah, what a sucker." So that's kind of been my take on it for a long time. What do you think?
Well, I think you're hitting at it a lot, especially since we have more people who are becoming college educated, and so they are out here trying to get jobs, especially if they're getting tech jobs. They get lured away, and one thing about tech is it can pull from people from any class and economic level. If you can get access to a lot of the training, you can go from poor, you know, generational poverty to making, you know, 60, 70, 80, 100+ thousand dollars a year, and suddenly be in a whole new class and think, I want all the trappings to go with that. It's seductive. But I'd like to think it's not so reductive. I'd like to think that human beings will exercise a little bit more thought and discretion just because they have access to money and not be so easily seduced. But it doesn't seem like that. I mean, according to the article that we've referenced, Why Americans Don't Vote by, is it Eric Levitz? It is Eric Levitz in the Intelligencer, that this is happening in France and Britain as well. You know, it's not just the American left. And so when you think about the fact that this is something that goes beyond the American dream, it sounds like maybe it has its roots in
human desire for comfort and maybe even human greed. I don't know. Again, I feel like I'm being reductionist, but what else is there?
Yeah, it's so confusing, you know, just, I mean, the predicament that we're in and just to see the way people behave. You know, the way I was brought up, I kind of, you know, thought that everybody was brought up with these certain values and that meant we're all in this to kind of together and we believed in these certain values, which Trump just completely tramples on every time he opens his mouth. And then yet to see these people that in so many other ways seem to share my values, yet he and his ilk don't completely repulse them. I'm just, it just head scratcher day every day.
Well, so what do your friends say, or your family, your circle say, in terms of how they look at voting? Do they look at voting for being concerned about their best interests, or do they find themselves kind of seduced by trappings of power and I want my turn at the truck?
I guess I'm in a bubble. I mean, my even though I come from a Southern conservative Christian background, me and all my siblings vote values and conscience, and all my friends do too. And it's funny because I live in rural area, you know, not far away from Portland. So I kind of span a lot of different views. But everybody I know who's a friend or family votes conscience and so, yeah, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we heard you.
Yes, we can.
Yeah, so I don't know. I guess I'm in a weird bubble.
Well, you know, we've heard about that Oregon bubble and that Portland bubble before. But
my family that I'm talking about ranges all the way from Washington, Alaska, Hawaii, South Carolina. Mm-hmm. So they're from a wide range too. So I don't know. I don't understand anything anymore, and that's why I'm listening to you so I can learn.
Yeah. I think your bubble is not that unusual in that I think all of us, regardless of our political stripe, we tend to associate with people who think or feel like us. So one of the challenges is how do you get beyond your bubble? How do we get reach out to those that are different than ourselves? And I'm sure that there are, I have family members who don't vote like I do, but I don't speak to them, I don't think, or we don't associate with one another because our interests are different.
I do actually associate with people. Like I said, I'm rural. I actually have a small farm, and I have, like, for example, I do have a neighbor who lives next door who engages me in conversation, and he's actually very intelligent. He's actually recently out of prison. Has a lot of interesting life stories to tell. He's probably in his 40s, maybe 50. He's a Trump backer. However, he's really intelligent in so many ways and generous, and we've had some discussions, and we usually end up with let's agree to disagree. And I'm always at a little bit of a loss of words when it really comes to trying to figure out how to get him to see my point of view. But anyway,
I think that's an important point that you speak with your neighbor and you realize that your neighbor is intelligent, who has a point of view, and that. I think that's the starting point to be able to sit down and speak with people who we might disagree with and find out that we might have common ground, that there are things that we may agree on. And it takes some effort.
Yeah, well, in this case, not sitting down, it's standing like 10 plus feet apart across a fence.
Exactly.
Doing that social distancing. Exactly.
Yeah,
Let me ask you a question, Brian. What does he say when you ask him just in plain English and simple words to describe why he votes for Trump, why he thinks Trump will help him?
You know, I haven't ever asked it in simple terms exactly like that, and that's a good point. I'm trying to think back on the conversation, what he said. I think he basically says that I think he said something along the lines that even though the guy doesn't always behave well, that he cares about Americans. I think that's basically, and he's also from a logging background, so he's from a resource extraction industry, and I think that they often see Trump as their, supporting people like hardworking people that do the fundamental work to keep our society going, and that the liberals only care about, saving the planet, don't care about people. I think he said things along those lines.
Well, let me give you some pointers, because I had a mechanic, well, white guy, his name was Lee, out in East Portland, East County, and I enjoyed his company. He was a staunch Republican, and I'm a woman of color, and so we would have conversations, and he was really supporting the whole Republican perspective. But one thing we both had in common is that we had family who'd been in the military, and I had served in the military for a short while too. And I pointed out something to him. Now, people say Trump is for the working class, and he was going to bring back all these manufacturing jobs, which, well, didn't happen. And you talk to these people in Indiana and Illinois and ask them how they feel. But when I asked my mechanic, Lee, I said, well, look, your daughter and your son are both in the military, and the president we had at the time did not want the returning vets to have VA care. And VA care was being gutted. I said, well, how do you feel about that? Because the very person you say is for you is against your children who are serving the country that you love so much. And you can't say that because he would want to say, well, that's communist. That's being, a red and all that. So I said, and, I told you, my entire family, except for two people, had been in the military, both enlisted and officers. I said, so how are you going to tell me that I don't get it? You can't tell me I don't get it because I've been there. So you're telling me that you're okay with this man taking away your daughter's right for health care in the military after she served and did this dangerous job. And he was quiet for a long time. And it changed the tone of our whole conversation. It changed the tone of our whole conversation. Because I didn't say it as a gotcha. I said it as a, well, let's look at this value that you said you have, and let's dissect it and analyze it. And I think what happens, and tell me if what you feel about this, I think what happens is sometimes candidates will glom onto one aspect of what we care about in life and make it seem like because they care about that one thing, they really care about everything in our lives when they don't.
I think that's done all the time. And then they have a lot of help in that respect from Fox News and a lot of these right-wing sites who know exactly how to manipulate this stuff. And like, oh, look at the shiny thing over here. Don't look at the man behind the curtain. So, I think it really works. I do think that we really need to pay attention to what they're saying over on Fox. And I know I have a hell of a time doing that myself. But I think, oh gosh, that stuff is so powerful. There was a movie made some time ago, which I haven't seen, but I've heard parts of it, about a woman basically doing a story about her father who went down the Fox rabbit hole, and it really studies the effect of that propaganda.
Yes. Yes.
Well, we do have another listener on the line, if you'd like me to.
Thank you.
All right, well, thank you, Brian, and thank you. We'll go to our next caller.
Good morning, caller.
Okay. Give a few seconds as we make the transition.
Hello, hello, hello.
Good morning. Yes.
Hi.
And who are we speaking with?
This is Francis.
Hi, Francis. How are you doing?
I'm good. I've been thinking about why people vote and don't vote, and I think this virus, in a way, it's kind of an equalizer. It's kind of allowed people who maybe normally didn't see things, see how corporations are represented more than people are, and you know, corporations can't catch the virus because they're not people. However, yep. they are given the same equality as people. They are given personhood, and I think maybe people are starting to see that that's not the way it's supposed to be. But I think people need to have something to vote for. Now, down here on the ground, a lot of people who were very, very, very supportive of Bernie Sanders were thoroughly dismayed at how corporate media and everybody pretty much put his campaign to, you know, stopped it. And now the choice, quote unquote, is to vote for someone who wrote the crime bill, which sent a whole lot of people to prison, and somehow be content with that because he's not Trump. And to give people that kind of a choice and expect them to go vote is not really being very thoughtful or logical or reasonable. A lot of people will not vote because that is the choice they have been given. And I don't know why that continues to happen, other than the fact that, you know, insurance industry and prison industry and all these corporations are taking the place of representing the people.
Yeah.
So how we get that how do we get that to change I'm really kind of dismayed at how everybody knows about the oppression and what goes on in our system. However, everybody just kind of goes along with it. And I don't know if it's because that's their jobs, their salaries come from the system that's set up the way it is, or what. But it's like how much injustice and misery do the powers that be have to see before they realize it's not working? Does that make any sense?
Right.
Well, it
I think that's a very good analysis that you're making there, Frances, in terms of seeing how politicians act and what may motivate people to vote or don't. And when the choice is the lesser of two evils, then that
they're
not
going to
vote. Yes, indeed.
And I've talked to several young people who feel that way. It's like they may vote just because they feel that Trump is so awful, but they don't see that that's really going to change the system that has oppressed so many people for so long. And I think if you give people an option that rises people above the corporations, they will vote in mass. But that's not.
And the point you also made is the recognition of the power of the corporation, which continues to suppress the voices of those who would counter them. So it's much more difficult for those voices to rise up.
I don't understand how it isn't the Senate majority, and what they are doing right now is complicit in everything criminal that's going on, but they continue to do it. It's like they've forsaken what they're there for. They're there to represent the people, and it's not happening. So I think this next election, though, even though it's hard to get people organized, I think people see for themselves what's going on, and it looks like perhaps the Senate will change during the next election. But if you give people something worthwhile to vote for, a cause, a representation, they will vote. And it,
well, we hope people,
I think, yeah. I really am. I appreciate you guys, and I think corporate media is pretty amazing, because even though that man says and does a lot of ridiculous things, oftentimes you can see what he is trying to say, but he didn't say it. But the media jumps on the fact that he said something stupid, and then we hear about it for the next 3 days. That isn't helping anything, as far as I'm concerned. And as long as we keep playing that game, you know, getting ugly and snide, and that snideness doesn't get anywhere, ever, never has. And as long as that game is continued to be played, people aren't going to get the right information.
Well, one of the challenges is that even though I think they're being snarky and snide, as you said, with the response to him saying stupid stuff like ingest disinfectant, the point is to emphasize that on a grassroots, very fundamental human level, this man is, one, thoughtless because he says stupid stuff. Number two, he does not demonstrate or speak a regard and value for human life. So
right.
This is when my being
so
a reductionist is good. Well, but
so
that's
me,
the whole thing.
That,
we need to look deeper
Ray,
than that. Well, wait a minute, Francis, let me finish.
Man.
Let me finish, because I've been losing. You know, the problem is we keep thinking we the people can vote him out instead of looking at those, the corporations, those, the elites keep him in. And we have to look beyond just our simple electoral process to remove this man. We need a combination of an electoral process, grassroots organizing, and grassroots boycott strategies, you know, to help pressure corporations into making these choices. But we as human beings are not doing that, which goes to the whole point of Eric Levitt's article. Why don't Americans recognize this and put together an effective machinery to combat it? And, you know,
and
I'm listening. Go ahead.
People,
go ahead.
We elect people to go to Congress to represent us. The only reason that this charade has continued as long as it has and has been allowed to continue is because the Senate majority is allowing that to happen. So that man can be as ridiculous as he is, but the only reason he's still there is because the Senate majority is allowing him to be there. And they are complicit in whatever he says and does. So electing representation, I guess, is the way to get around that. So hopefully in the next election that will happen. So then it goes back to organizing. Then that goes back to organizing.
Okay, right. And that'll have to be our last word because we're almost out of time. But thank you.
Thank you, Francis.
We do have one more caller, if you can take one more.
If we can squeeze them in really quickly.
Sure
thing,
just one moment.
Okay. It's 8:56 coming up at 9 o'clock. It'll be the Old Mole Variety Hour. With news, views, and all those other oohs that you need. Oohs of approval. How about that?
Caller, you are on the line.
Good morning, caller.
I just wanted to throw in something. You brought up how not everyone even has phones, and that radio should be a means of organizing when we can't really gather. And I know that KABU at one point in time had campaigns to distribute radios to precisely put the tools of this community into people's hands who may not have it, and we could maybe do that again.
Well, we're doing good to keep our staff paid right now, because like a lot of organizations, you know, we're dependent upon people being able to financially support us. Here's the challenge. The people we're trying to serve who normally would be financially supporting us may not be able. So we don't have the power to buy anything and give away like we would like to. What we are trying to do with our money is to continue to be on the air and purchase either software or equipment that allows us to stay put. I mean, that's a good idea, and we need partners to help us do that. I don't think we should abandon it because we don't have the money right now. I think we just need to find the partners to help us do that.
I don't think that it would cost almost any money if we reached out to the community and asked how many people have an extra radio lying around.
Now, that's what I said. We just need partners to help us do that. So that's one thing we can do. Listeners, if you have extra radios, especially battery-operated, put together a network. We can do it online. We can do it through cable. We can do it through your community newspaper. But reach out and connect with each other and share the wealth, so to speak. But we are at 8:58, caller, and I hate to let you go, but I need to make way for the next show. I want to thank our engineer, Tammy, for holding it down. Thank you, callers. Keep supporting your community connection, KBOO, both financially, if you're able, but more importantly, by sharing it with your neighbors and friends. We'll talk to you later.
Programming of KBOO in accordance with the requirements of the Communications Act of 1934 and certification requirements of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Information about KBOO Community Radio's open meeting policy is available